Have you ever just stopped and thought, what actually makes a painting worth, say, hundreds of millions of dollars? It's clearly not just the canvas and the paint itself, is it?
No, not at all.
It's the whole story, you know, the history, the drama, the human element woven into every single brushstroke. We're
Exactly.
talking about objects that kind of transcend simple value. They become these huge cultural icons, and they command prices that are just, well, mind-boggling.
It's true. And those huge crises you see hitting the headlines, they're often just scratching the surface of a much, much deeper story. So today in our deep dive, we're going to walk through some of the most expensive paintings ever sold. We're using the latest lists, as of 2025. But we're not just going to list prices. We'll dig into the whole world of fine art, collecting its past, its present, even how surprisingly resilient it is when global events shake things up. We really want to connect these huge price tags to the bigger picture, like art's role throughout history.
So our mission today is basically to give you a shortcut, a way into understanding this really captivating world. We want to unpack the stories, the trends beneath the surface that make these works truly priceless, you know, way beyond the actual money. Get ready for some hopefully aha moments and facts that maybe surprise you and leave you feeling like you really get the interplay between culture, finance, maybe even a bit of geopolitics in the art market. Now, you might think instinctively that these crazy bidding wars and super exclusive private collections, that's all a modern thing, right? A product of today's wealth.
Yeah, that's a common thought.
But here's where it gets really interesting. How far back does this actually go?
Oh, much, much further back than people often realize. It really echoes through antiquity. I mean, think about those incredible Indonesian cave paintings. They've dated those back 45,000 years.
45,000.
Yeah. Or, the amazing gold art buried with Egyptian pharaohs. Or even the statues from ancient Greece and Rome that were so revered. Humans have, it seems, always valued art, collected it, sometimes as a symbol of power or devotion or just pure beauty.
Okay, so it's always been valued, but how did we get from that sort of scattered appreciation to something more like a market? What happened after Rome fell, for example? Did that change things?
Oh, absolutely. The fall of Rome was a huge shift. The market, as we might kind of think of it, pretty much hit pause for centuries. Mostly, art was commissioned, by royalty or the church. It was mainly about showing devotion or asserting authority.
Makes sense.
But then, boom, the 14th century arrives, the Renaissance kicks off, and things change dramatically. You have these wealthy merchants, powerful families, think the Medici's starting to actively commission and collect art, and not just for religious reasons anymore.
Right, it became about status.
Exactly. Displaying personal power, showing off sophistication, intellect. Even things like the rise of Protestantism played a role. Lots of paintings moved out of churches and into private hands.
Interesting side effect.
And here's a fun fact. Rembrandt, back in 1634, got paid what would be roughly $300,000 today for just one painting.
300,000 in the 1600s.
Yeah, shows you the kind of value placed on mastery even then. It was one of the priciest pieces of its time.
That really does put today's numbers in a different light. Okay, so fast forward a bit. The Industrial Revolution. That feels like when modern collecting really started taking shape.
Definitely. You had this new class of wealthy industrialists, a lot of Americans actually, who started buying up European classics like crazy.
The Grand Tour treasures.
Kind of, yeah. And this era also saw more public galleries popping up, private ones too, which started to democratize art appreciation a bit more.
So what this tells us today is art's value has always been there, but the market for it. That's constantly shifted, reflecting these bigger economic and social changes. All right, let's dive into some of the specific big hitters then. The masterpieces that have fetched these absolutely staggering prices, because these aren't just sales receipts. They feel more like chapters in art history, packed with drama, mystery, incredible stories.
That's a great way to put it. And what's really striking is how these record sales often act like signposts. They reflect these huge shifts in global power, in taste, even in what we decide is great art. Each sale tells you something about the time it happened. Okay, so kicking off at number one, and probably the most mysterious, is Salvator Mundi, attributed to Leonardo da Vinci.
A big one, $450.3 million.
Yep, back in 2017, it's a painting of Jesus holding this crystal orb, and it's incredibly rare. Fewer than 20 known da Vinci paintings exist.
And the story behind finding it is wild.
Oh, completely wild. It basically reappeared in 2005, heavily painted over, looking like just a copy. Some New York art dealers bought it for only $10,000.
10,000 for a potential da Vinci.
Well, nobody knew then. It took painstaking restoration by Diane Dwyer Modestini. She became convinced it was the real deal, pointing to things like the perfect lips as a Da Vinci signature.
But there's still debate.
Oh, yeah. Big debate. Some experts still argue it's maybe from his workshop, not the master himself.
Mm.
And adding to the whole mystique, nobody knows exactly where it is right now.
It's just missing.
Its current location is unknown, yeah.
Yeah.
It went from royal collections, vanished for ages, resurfaced, mislabeled, sold for just 45 fives in 1958, and then became the most expensive painting ever. It says so much about how we value not just the art, but the name.
Incredible journey. Okay, so from a Renaissance mystery, let's jump way forward. Abstract Expressionism. You mentioned Interchange by Willem de Kooning, around $300 million, and Jackson Pollock's number 17A, about $200 million. They sold together.
That's right. Part of the same huge private deal in 2015 to Kenneth C. Griffin. $500 million for two paintings.
Wow. And de Kooning's Interchange? What's significant there?
It was a real turning point for him.
Yeah.
An early abstract landscape, though some see the female figure in there, too. Very raw, energetic, influenced by artists like Franz Klein.
And the Pollock. That's his famous drip painting style.
Classic Pollock drip painting. And while it might look random, you know, if you really study it, you see this incredible control, almost like a dance captured on canvas. That precision is part of why it commands such value. It's the process made visible.
Okay, next up, The Card Players by Paul Cézanne. Around $250 million for that one.
Yep, and it's one of a series he painted five versions. This specific one went to the royal family of Qatar.
Ah, and you mentioned this earlier. This was part of Qatar's big cultural push.
Exactly. It wasn't just buying a famous painting. It was a strategic move. Part of their goal to become this major international intellectual and cultural hub, investing in cultural capital.
Makes sense. Now, another one with a complicated history. Klimt's Wasserschlangen II, or Water Serpents II. Around $198 million.
Yes, and complicated is putting it mildly. First, it was stolen by the Nazis during World War II, really dark past.
It's awful.
But the drama didn't stop there. More recently, in 2013, it got tangled up in the whole Bouvier affair.
Right, the dealer accused of fraud.
Yeah. Yves Bouvier allegedly tricked the Russian billionaire Dmitry Ribolovlev into massively overpaying for it. Estimates are around $75 million extra.
Ooh.
It really throws a harsh light on provenance, you know, the history of ownership and ethical gray areas, sometimes just outright fraud that can happen in these high-stakes deals.
Definitely a cautionary tale.
Oh.
Okay, let's switch to a story with maybe a happier ending. Rembrandt's The Standard Bearer, also around $198 million.
Ah, yes. A great story. It's his amazing three-quarter-length self-portrait. It was in the famous Rothschild collection in Paris for a long time.
And France wanted to keep it.
They did. The French government considered it a national treasure, even put an export ban on it, gave the Louvre the first option to buy.
But they couldn't raise the money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the Dutch government stepped in with major help from the Rembrandt Foundation and managed to acquire it.
So it went home.
It went home. It's now on permanent display in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. A real national treasure returned.
Love that. Okay, pop art time. Andy Warhol's Shot Sage Blue Marilyn. $195 million. Instantly recognizable.
Absolutely quintessential Warhol. Pop art royalty. Exploring celebrity mass culture.
And the shot part of the name is literal, right?
It is. Great anecdote. This performance artist, Dorothy Podber, apparently just walked into Warhol's studio, saw a stack of these Marilyn paintings, asked if she could shoot them. Warhol mumbled, sure, thinking she meant take photos.
Oh, no.
And she pulls out a revolver and fires right through the stack, hence the shot Marilyn's. Perfectly captures that provocative pop art spirit.
Unbelievable. And sticking with pop art, Roy Lichtenstein's masterpiece, $165 million.
Another icon, you know, it's straight away the comic book style, those Benday dots, the dialogue bubble.
Classic Lichtenstein.
But what's really cool about this sale is why it was sold. The owner, Agnes Gunn, major philanthropist, sold it to the hedge fund guy, Stephen A. Cohen, specifically to raise money.
Not just for profit.
No, to create the Art for Justice Fund, aimed at criminal justice reform. A really powerful example of art being used directly for philanthropy and social change.
That's fantastic. Okay. A slightly surprising name, maybe, in this price bracket. Claude Monet, his mules, or haystacks. $110.7 million.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to see Monet hit that level, although his Haystack series is obviously beloved.
So why is such a high price?
Well, get this. In 2019, it sold for 44 times what it went for back in 1986.
44 times.
It just shows Monet's enduring appeal, sure, but also how dramatically art values can just skyrocket over time, even for established masters if the market conditions are right.
Incredible appreciation. And one last quick one just to show the crazy lives these things lead. Cézanne's Boire et Fruit, still life, right? Around $59 million.
Yeah, kettle and fruits. But the story isn't the price. It's that it was stolen.
Stolen? From where?
From someone's home in Massachusetts back in 1978. Vanished. Then 21 years later, it turns up. Recovered from a gun dealer in Pittsburgh.
Couldn't make it up.
Right. Just shows the wild journeys these artworks can go on. Totally separate from the auction room glamour.
Okay, so we've heard some amazing stories behind these massive sales. But what does all this tell us about where the art market is now and where it might be heading? It's clearly not just about dusty old masterpieces anymore, right? It feels like a really dynamic, evolving scene.
Oh, absolutely. The future landscape is full of really interesting shifts. First off, you just can't ignore online sales. I mean, the growth was just staggering up 300% compared to 2019. Okay, dipped slightly, like 5% in early 2023, but the overall trend is huge.
What's driving that? Just convenience.
Globalization, smartphones everywhere, new digital platforms making it easier, and part of that is these new apps popping up offering fractional shares in artworks.
So you can buy like a tiny piece of a Picasso.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
The idea is to democratize art investment. But, you know, the jury's still out on their reputation and whether it just turns art into another stock market gamble. It raises questions about speculation versus appreciation.
Interesting tension there. What else is shaping the market? The economy must be playing a role.
Definitely. Those economic headwinds are real. Rising interest rates globally mean less easy money, less liquidity. We saw total fine art auction sales drop about 14% in the first half of 2023 compared to the year before. And the really high-end stuff, worth over $10 million, took a noticeable hit.
So is the party over for mega sales?
Not necessarily. The market's shown incredible resilience before. It tends to bounce back. But it does suggest maybe a bit more caution at the very top end for now, while the mid-market seems more stable.
Okay. Resilient, but maybe adapting. You mentioned technology before. Beyond online sales, what else?
Well, new technologies are playing a bigger role. People talk a lot about blockchain for tracking provenance, the history of ownership. But maybe those claims are a bit overcooked for now.
Right. Still seems complex.
But artificial intelligence, that looks really promising. Startups are using AI to spot fakes with incredible accuracy, like 98% success rates. Big insurance firms are already signing contracts. That could be a game changer for verifying authenticity.
Wow. AI authenticators. Okay. What about where the money is coming from? New players.
Big time. We're seeing the definite rise of new markets. As global wealth shifts, places like China, the wider Asia-Pacific region, the Middle East, and North Africa, they're becoming major forces.
So new collectors, new tastes.
Exactly. It's not just new money flooding in. It brings different cultural perspectives, different collecting priorities. Significant investment, especially from royals in the Gulf states, could genuinely change the market dynamics, maybe even shift which painting is considered the most priceless in the future.
That makes total sense. Wealth shifts, focus shifts. Any other big trends?
Yes, definitely ESG considerations. Environmental, social, and corporate governance.
ESG in the art world. How does that work?
It's becoming increasingly important. There's a much bigger focus now on provenance, ethical dealing, and especially the restitution of art stolen in the past, like during WWII.
Ah, like that Klimt story earlier.
Precisely. Christie's recently faced a court case in France over restituting a painting stolen during the war. As more institutional money, big investment funds, move into art, they bring these ESG expectations with them. It's becoming standard practice.
So more accountability.
Hopefully. And one last point, a bit more technical, is the rise of third-party backing. Instead of the auction house guaranteeing a minimum price, they increasingly get an outside party to place an irrevocable bid before the auction.
Meaning it's guaranteed to sell?
Yeah, it guarantees a sale at a certain level, reducing the auction house's risk.
Yeah.
It just shows the market's getting more financially complex, more structured behind the scenes.
Okay, we've covered the market's future digital ethical angles like ESG, new money. But what happens when art confronts something bigger than markets, like conflict? How does this world of value and collecting react when culture itself is under threat? Which brings us, unfortunately, to a really crucial point. Art's role in the face of global crises, specifically thinking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah, the response from the art world to the invasion in Ukraine has been pretty significant, and it's multifaceted. You saw major auction houses, Sotheby's, Bonhams, Christie's, canceling their regular Russian art sales pretty quickly. Sotheby's even organized fundraising events to support humanitarian aid.
So a clear stance commercially.
A clear condemnation, yes,
yeah.
Using their platforms. But it goes beyond just sales. Art itself is being used as a form of activism very powerfully. Ukrainian artists worked with the Pinchuk Foundation in Kyiv to put on this really harrowing exhibition. They took over the former Russia House building in Davos and called it the Russia War Crimes House.
Wow. What did they show?
It featured stark documentary photos, recordings detailing alleged war crimes by the Russian military, really using art to bear witness, to document in a way words alone can't.
That's incredibly powerful, a stark reminder of art's role in documenting history, even the darkest parts. What about actually saving art during the conflict?
That's another huge challenge, and it raises vital questions about protecting cultural heritage in wartime. For instance, the Maidan Museum in Kyiv is doing something interesting. They're not just trying to save old masterpieces. They're collecting everyday objects from the conflict, bits of weapons, handmade goods, personal items. Over 4,000 things already.
To tell the story later.
Exactly. To describe this conflict for future generations. But tragically, there's the other side too. Ukraine has accused Russia of looting thousands of artworks, over 2,000 pieces from museums in places like Mariupol.
Just devastating. A cultural catastrophe.
Yeah, it really is. But even amidst that horror, you see this incredible resilience, like the Boris Voznitsky National Art Gallery in Lviv. They've been painstakingly reinstalling artworks across their branches, even planning online exhibits.
Keeping the flame alive.
It demonstrates this unwavering commitment to keeping culture going, even when facing unimaginable adversity. So if we try and tie all these threads together, connecting it all to the bigger picture, you really see that art is so much more than just pretty things or assets to trade. It's this deep mirror reflecting our history, power struggles, finance, yes, but also human resilience, cultural identity, and enduring value, even when everything else seems to be falling apart. From ancient cave walls to digital auctions today, the story of art collecting is really the story of us.
So what does all this mean for you listening? As we've talked about these incredible artworks changing hands for sums that are hard to even comprehend, it really makes you think, doesn't it? Beyond the price tag, beyond the dollars and euros, what is it that truly defines a masterpiece for the next generation? And what kind of responsibility comes with owning or even just appreciating a piece of history like that?
Mm-hmm.
It really makes you consider how our understanding of history, our ethics, especially with things like ESG becoming more prominent, how all that will shape what we choose to collect, and maybe more importantly, why we choose to cherish it in the years ahead.